Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll get started. Today's planning committee meeting of the 28th of August 2024. Good afternoon, committee members, council officers, members of the public. We'll just start with a brief introduction of ourselves before we move on to the agenda. Myself, Councillor Afsar, is the chairman. To my right, I've got Planning Officer Naomi Perry and Planning Officer Barbara Toy. To the left, I've got Legal Representative Max Howarth and Democratic Services Officer Andrea Davis. If I can ask from the right, committee members, if you could press the mic and just introduce yourselves.
Yeah, Mike Luckerby representing Branston Ward.
Good afternoon, Councillor Michael Slater.
Good afternoon, Councillor Monica Holton.
Colin Whittaker, the Blythe Ward.
Good afternoon, Jackie Jones, Councillor for New Ward.
Good afternoon, Councillor Chris Medley, Dove Ward.
Good afternoon, Councillor Liz Bullock.
Thank you. We'll just start with some brief housekeeping rules. If I could ask everyone to switch off their mobile phones. We're not expecting a live fire drill, but if we do hear the fire alarm, it will be a live call, so we'll go back out of the way we came in onto the front of the car park and muster there. A polite notice, please, if I can ask members of the public not to call out when anybody's speaking, as it will prevent others from hearing the debate. We'll move on to the agenda itself, so we'll move on to agenda item number one. Do we have any apologies for absence?
Thank you, Chairman. We've received apologies from Councillor Mrs. Ashcroft and Councillor Alison Legg.
Thank you. Agenda item number two. Do we have any declarations of interest? Thank you. No declarations of interest. Agenda item number three. Would members please accept the minutes from the last meeting held on the 25th of June 2024? Could I have a proposer, please? Councillor Jones, could I have a seconder? Councillor Whittaker, thank you. All those in favour? Any against? Any abstentions? Thank you. Agenda item number four. Do we have any urgent business to be brought to the committee's attention? Thank you. We don't have any urgent business. Agenda item number five is to consider the planning permission for the application before us. Planning application P20240032, which is for the change of use from a single dwelling house, class C3, to a three-bed house in multiple occupancy, class C4, for up to four residents, including internal alterations, and the site address is 3 Meadow Road, Burton-on-Trent, Staffordshire, DE141TD. I will now pass over to the planning officer to present the case.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon. As the Chair said, this is application for 3 Meadow Road. The proposal is for change of use from a single dwelling house, use class C3, to a three-bed house in multiple occupation, class C4, for up to four residents, including internal alterations. The application has been called in by Councillor Hadley on the basis due to the additional noise and disturbance, internal layout of the proposed development, and traffic implications. I would note that use class C3 is for a single dwelling. C4 is for a small shared house for between 3 and 6 unrelated individuals. Planning consent is required for the change of use due to the Article 4 direction in Burton that removes permitted development rights for C4 uses up to 6 residents. Outside of the Article 4 area, the proposed works would be permitted development. I was asked this morning why the HMO register had been removed from the web. This was removed on a temporary basis during the riots, so premises, housing asylum seekers could not be identified. This is to be reviewed and it's likely to be back online within the next week. Okay, this plan identifies the site outlined in black. The pink area is the Burton number 2 and number 3 Town Centre Conservation Area, which sits immediately to the south of this site. The site sits to the north of Trent Bridge, a narrow access road onto the site. Immediately to the... Is that the mouse? Thank you. Sorry, should be more organised. Immediately to the south of the site is a vacant overgrown area that has previous consent as a care home. And to the south of that is a car parking area that's in here for the flats that are in the conversion of this building here and purpose-built flats here. The remainder of the properties here, the application property is the end terrace at the row of 4 properties, and opposite are further 2-storey houses. This area here is a public parking area and it's land that is owned by the council. Okay. So just wider context of the site sitting in this area between the 2 areas of the river. Some listed buildings set to the southwest of the site. This identifies the way the river comes around the site and effectively creates almost an island area wrapping around Meadow Road. The site does sit within flood zone 3, and a flood risk assessment dated March 2024 has been submitted with the application. It recognises that there is no sleeping accommodation proposed at ground floor level. All the bedrooms would be situated at first floor. So a similar situation to the existing and result in no additional risk over the above existing residential property. The flood risk assessment is listed as an approved document in the plans condition, and there is an informative to the appellant to consider installing flood resilience measures that are identified in the FRA. The recommendations of the flood risk assessment recommends that residents should sign up to the EA flood warning and implement a flood warning and evacuation plan. It also suggests flood resilience measures, including water compatible flooring, plaster and insulation, and raised electric points within the ground floor of the premises. This is just a few photographs to identify the site. The site is immediately behind this tree here. This is the vacant site to the south of the site and the application premises. The area immediately to the south of the property is not within the ownership of the applicant, and it is in separate ownership. So that parking area immediately to the south does not form part of the application. Identifying the entry that sits between number 3 and number 4, where the main entrance doors to both properties sit within the entry area. View along Meadow Road, looking towards Trent Bridge. the application property situated here, and this is the vacant site immediately to the south. As mentioned, the parking area that sits to the north of the block of four terraced houses, which is within the ownership of the council, and the flats that sit on the opposite side of Meadow Road. Rear elevation of the of the property, identifying the rear outbuilding and the garden shed. The garden shed to be used as cycle storage for the future residents. There's a further brick outbuilding existing, and that is to remain, and the rear garden, which provides more than adequate amenity space for the proposed use. Okay, so the proposed site plan doesn't differ from the existing, and so the garden area remains as existing, and there are no proposed external alterations to the property. So the existing and proposed elevations, there are no changes proposed. There is an existing ground floor side-facing window that is onto that area where the car was parked, but that is an obscurely glazed window, and it would remain as obscurely glazed. So the existing ground floor plans show two bedrooms and a bathroom at first floor, and the dining, living, kitchen, etc. at ground floor. There is also a obscurely glazed window here on the side of elevation. It's currently into a WC. Moving on to the proposed plans. This now shows three bedrooms at first floor level. Bedroom one would be a double room, the large room on the frontage. Bedroom two and bedroom three would be single rooms. All three have ensuite facilities. The existing obscurely glazed window on the side elevation first floor would remain, and would remain as obscurely glazed. Moving on to the content of the report, in terms of consultation responses, County Highways raised no objection, subject to a condition limiting the development to three bedrooms. Environmental Health confirmed that they have no comments to make, and the housing team no objections to the proposed layout in terms of the HMO. Staffordshire Police have raised no objections. In terms of publicity and representations, Burton Parish Council, no comments received. Ward members, no comments received. The former MP has raised concerns in relation to the overdevelopment of the site and loss of a family home, along with concerns in relation to the access to the property via shared entryway and additional noise and disturbance. Moving on to neighbour representations. Five objections were received, and they are summarised as large proportion of single occupancy units on Meadow Road, large amount of social housing under construction at Bargates. The area is subject to an Article 4 direction relating to HMOs and loss of a family home. Antisocial behaviour and impact on neighbourhood cohesion, shared entryway with facing front doors, additional noise and disturbance, impact on the conservation area, flooding impacts, insufficient parking, no parking to the land immediately to the south, access road is narrow, water pressure is shared and will be affected. Following reconsultation on the submission of amended details, four representations were received, and they're summarised as vetting of tenants offers little reassurance, communal area shown on floor plan could be another bedroom, and more than four residents could live there in the future. In terms of policies, the MPPF, the ESBC local plan, the design guide, separation distance amenity SPD, and the parking standards SPD. Moving on to the main body of the report, the development is considered to be acceptable in principle, being located within the settlement boundary of Burton-on-Trent and in close proximity of Burton Town Centre. The proposals would provide an affordable solution for single people and couples in close proximity of services and facilities, as well as public transport options, and therefore on balance offers a suitable form of sustainable development. Moving on to residential amenity, the existing dwelling could accommodate up to four residents, and the creation of an additional bedroom would not have a significant impact in terms of the number of residents, with four residents proposed. The accommodation provided meets the requirements of an HMO, and there is sufficient amenity space. The first floor side-facing window to the new bedroom is recommended to be obscurely glazed in order to prevent overlooking of the neighbouring property. The management of HMOs is controlled through HMO licensing administered by Environmental Health under the Housing Act and is not a material planning consideration. Subject to a condition to control the number of residents to four, it is considered that there will be no significant impact in terms of noise and disturbance, with no additional residents over the existing dwelling. In terms of design and impacts on the character of the area and heritage assets, no external alterations are proposed, and therefore there will be no adverse impacts on the visual amenity of the area or the appearance of the conservation area. Highway impacts. The additional bedroom proposed would not change the parking requirements for the existing dwelling, which would remain at two spaces. The dwelling does not benefit from off-street parking. However, there is a public car park a short distance to the north of the site. Secure cycle storage is proposed within the shed to the rear. The site is within short walk of the town centre, where there will be a choice of transport options to access local services, facilities and places of work. Moving on to flood risk and drainage, the application site is within flood zone 3 and is supported by an FRA. No sleeping accommodation is proposed at ground floor level, and given that the application building would remain in residential use, the proposals would not result in any additional risk over and above the existing situation. So in conclusion, the proposals comply with the local plan, parking standards SPD, design guide, separation distance and amenity SPD and the MPPF. The local authority has worked proactively with the applicant to secure the scheme before you. Recommendations approved with conditions as per the report. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move on to public speakers. We have one person wishing to speak on this item, so if I could ask Michael Thompson to come forward, please. You'll have 3 minutes to speak when your light comes on, and the timer will tell you when you're nearing the end. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I've been asked to speak on behalf of Mrs. Jenny Latham regarding the planned HMO at 3 Meadow Road. Jenny shares a single entrance with the property and is very concerned about the number of people who will be using it. We are led to believe there will be 3 or 4 tenants, but when taking into account visitors and friends, this could increase significantly and further exacerbate the problems which noise and the general inconvenience of negotiating such a narrow entrance. She believes the two properties share a single water supply which causes fluctuations in pressure and flow and which will worsen with additional consumers. Both properties have septic tanks that are emptied by the way of laying pipes from a vacuum tanker through the entry. In Jenny's case, this is every 18 months to 2 years. But the other property will need emptying more frequently, thus causing further inconvenience. Having been recently widowed, she feels vulnerable, and the transient nature of an HMO next door will only add to those feelings. Other issues that will not only affect Jenny but the rest of the residents on Meadow Road are mainly traffic related. Number 3 has a very small frontage and parking will prove challenging, especially on bin collection day, which is already chaotic. without additional vehicles clogging up the road, that is. The passing point is already plagued by antisocial parking, and to the side of number 3 is a drive that is the only access to the former Abbey Lodge Hotel. This is currently up for sale and described as ripe for development, thus potentially increasing the volume of traffic. There is additional parking further along Meadow Road, but the new tenants may decide against using this if they experience the many incidents of theft and vandalism that occur when you park away from the houses. Additional vehicles parked by the houses will cause major problems, as there is a working farm at the end of the road whose large vehicles and implements require access on a regular basis. Weekends are extremely problematic, and the high volume of traffic accessing the sports ground has often resulted in heated exchanges, and complaints to the council have been ongoing. Increasing the amount of people looking for parking spaces will not improve this matter. Thank you.
Thank you. We have no further speakers on this item, so I can open the floor up for debate with the committee members. Do I have an indication of anyone wishing to speak first? Councillor Jones.
Could I just ask the officers to explain Article 4 and how that has made a difference to this application? Because I think you said that until we covered Burton within Article 4, this would have just been a permitted development right and there would be no influence of this committee on that at all. So can you just explain the Article 4, its purpose, its core, you know, its benefits and what have you? Thank you.
The Article 4 direction came into force in April 2023, and it was to control the numbers of HMOs within the Burton area. So there is a boundary line that is part of the Article 4. This means that any HMO requires planning consent within that area. Up to 6 people sharing a property under Class C4 is normally permitted development, so you can undertake that without requiring any planning consent. The Article 4 means that planning consent is required for anything up to, well, for any HMO now, rather than just anything over 6 residents.
That just applies within the Burton area?
It does, yes.
Councillor Huckabee, did you intend to speak?
I'm concerned with the flooding aspect of this application. Current legislation obviously gives a thumbs up to it, as indicated by the officers. But this is for a change of use. So a change of use is a change of use. It's not moving from accommodated house to accommodated house, is a change of use. If I look over the road where we gave permission for the new build that takes place, those houses have been built with 600 millimetres of gap between the finished floor level of the internal house and the land level outside. They apparently were caused to do that because of a need to address the future flooding. So we have now a change of use. My concern as a member of this committee and being asked to approve it is the incongruency of one application, which was a change of use from ordinary land to housing, to this one, which is to change of use from a dwelling home into a multi-roomed house. The fact that the original ones need 600 millimetres to safeguard them against planning, and it was approved and it was built as that. With this one, the same situation is likely to occur, that likeliness gave rise to the need for 600 millimetres, but is not needed for this one, although the future situation of the house is identical to the same as those that were built with the 600 plus flood defence, you might say. So I wonder about the definition of change of use. I know it's said that it's moving from one home to another. That gives the direction of the non-requirement of any flood defence. But just a few yards away, a different interpretation of change of use demanded that difference in height to protect those properties. I don't see, in my mind, and I might be a pedant, I don't see any difference. The fact that we're given change of use permission doesn't depend on whether it's a home to a home, but a change of use. And that change of use determines that for the future, we should be able to foresee implications that will probably, high probability, exist. So that's my concern, that there's a bit of lack of logic in this position.
Thank you. I'll ask the officers to comment on your question.
In terms of new build, there is completely different requirements in terms of flood risk as opposed to a change of use of an existing much older building. The flood risk assessment identifies that all the sleeping accommodation is at first floor. They haven't proposed any bedrooms at ground floor level, and that will be because of the flood risk situation. Therefore, there is two very large rooms of communal area within the ground floor, which isn't necessarily normal on an HMO application. So all the bedroom spaces are at first floor, as recommended by the EA in terms of vulnerability. The flood risk assessment does make a reference to the EA signing up to the EA flood warning and the implementation of flood warning and evacuation plan. It also makes some recommendations about flood resilience measures. And as I mentioned in my presentation, these are water compatible flooring and plaster and insulation, as well as raising electrics and that sort of thing. And keeping high-value items above flood level. There is an informative within the report suggesting installing the flood-resistant measures, but if members feel that that is something they wish to see as a condition, that could be added as a condition that consent is implemented in accordance with the recommendations in the flood risk assessment.
If I might come back.
Yep, go ahead, thank you.
The key point there is the change of use, not what the building was previously, but the change of use to what it will become. It wouldn't matter a jot whether it was a previous home or some sort of building used for storage or manufacturing, what have you. The change of use is the key point on this, surely. Not the fact that it was a home before. It's not going to be a home before, because change of use does not bring coupled with it what the building was used for before, just whether the building in the future can actually be established to form a home for the future. Therefore, there is a close proximity of the reasoning for the 600 millimetres further up the street as opposed to the non-requirement in this particular area.
Are you referring to the flats at Meadow Court?
Yeah.
In terms...
Just to the...
Yeah.
Come down.
I don't know whether we can go back to the... This plan. Yeah. You'll see that the Meadow Court, the separation distance to the river to the east is significantly less than the rear garden of number three and the other properties on that block to the river. So the separation distance there is completely different, and that was new build. And there are different requirements on new build than there is on change of use. Although this is regarded as change of use, it's in outside of the Burton area, this would be permitted development to change of use because it is still remaining as a residential use. And if it wasn't for the Article 4, this application wouldn't be before you. There wouldn't be a requirement for a planning application for this use because it would be permitted development.
So the only reason that it's before us is the call in of the local councillor.
No, it's that there is a planning... Well, yes, it's been called in, and that a planning application is required for this change of use because of the Article 4 direction.
Which is?
The Article 4 direction is within the Burton area, and as I explained when Councillor Jones asked about it, it restricts... It removes the permitted development for small HMOs, so that all HMOs require consent, but within an area identified within the Burton area.
Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Chair. I'm struggling to see why there is any difference really here between this and a domestic residential unit, because as a residential unit, which is what it has been historically, you can have four people there quite easily. You're still going to have four people there. The parking could be the same issues as it was then to be now, and other things like the access for the bin lorry men and all the rest of it to me seem to be exactly the same as they were if this is a residential unit. So I'm struggling to see that there is really any significant difference, except that this property is going to be licensed by our licensing team, I guess. Is that a fair summation of what's happening here?
Correct. All HMOs are now required to be registered. The administration of the registration is through Environmental Health Housing Team. And they have set requirements under the regulations as to what can and what can't be registered.
So if there are any issues with the with the people in the HMO, there is a recourse to the licensing team, whereas if it's just a private family, there wouldn't be any at all. Is that also correct?
Correct, yes. The operation of the HMO is covered by the regulations and the registration. Equally, they have submitted a management plan and dealing with problematic tenants documents that are listed within the plan's condition. So if there was issues, there is some recourse through planning, but equally it would be through the registration team as well.
So does that sort of conform to the terms that we have in our selective licensing scheme as well, that those are covered in a similar sort of way? Or not really?
I'm not familiar with the selective licensing, I'm sorry.
That's okay, that's fine. Okay, you've answered the questions about the similarity. Thank you.
Councillor Whittaker.
You said originally the Article 4 is used to control HMOs, the number of HMOs. Is that just because the licensed HMOs or control of numbers of HMOs?
Numbers.
So I presume there's a top limit allowed in that area?
No policy on numbers or anything.
Right.
I suppose before the Article 4 came into place, we had no other than licensing. There might have been other ones that were operating without a license, without permission. You know, we didn't know if they existed or not.
So it's controlling, not controlling the numbers, but controlling the HMOs.
That's right. But from a planning policy point of view, the important thing is to have mixed communities, so you don't want a concentration of any particular house type in one area. So the Housing Choice SPD, which offers guidance on HMOs, does say, you know, we don't want to see two together. So, you know, there's not going to be a concentration in one particular area. So that's the policy stance, you know, making sure that there's not an over-concentration of HMOs in any one location within Burton.
Thank you. Do we have any further speakers? Councillor Holton.
Thank you, Chair. Just going back to the management of the tenants or prospective tenants that will be going into this property, and apologies if I've missed that, have we got any details of the management, or particularly where tenants are being problematic and how that's being dealt with?
The operation of an HMO is covered under the licensing and the HMO regulations, but equally the applicants have submitted a management plan and dealing with problematic tenants document, which shows their commitment to ensuring that the property runs smoothly, and they are listed in the plan's condition on the application.
Councillor Whittaker.
Yeah. And are they expected on an annual basis with this, or is it just sort of they're inspected if there's a problem? I mean, I don't know how they're run in that respect.
I'm not sure on the regime, but they are inspected, and it is a constant thing in terms of their registration, because they have to renew their registration.
Should I just come back to it? Do they have to have fire doors within that, or is it because there's so many people in the house they don't need fire doors and things, or is that a standard thing?
Well, that would be building regs and the HMO regulations. I think it depends on the size of the HMO as to the fire requirements, but I can't answer the detail on that, I'm afraid, because it would be building regs and the HMO regulations.
Councillor Huckabee.
On fire requirements, I actually built a property in Tutbury, and it had an integral garage, and I believe the fire requirements then were that the ceiling of the garage had to be double boarded plaster as a fire break, given certain minutes of safety to allow escape. With this one, it's been indicated that the rear extension, or the rear part of the building, the ground floor will be retained by the owner of the property and used as storage. That means that, or does that mean that there will be control of any of the things that might be stored there? What I'm thinking of, if you decided to store 300 gallons of inflammable liquid, then it being a domestic home dwelling that you claim it to be, that would make the people who lived in the upstairs floor vulnerable. So nothing's been mentioned about that, so I guess it's not being covered by that.
The area is to be retained by the owner and the landlord of the premises. It says on here, for the use of landlords, maintenance and gardening operatives. So it's for general storage for the maintenance of the property and the garden.
And garden implements could include a lawnmower, petrol-driven lawnmower, so there could be the storage of flammable liquids downstairs, of which there will be no control.
That is separate and separated from the main part of the house.
I thought
there's a locked doorway.
Yeah, but I thought bedroom, is it bedroom one? I can't.
Above.
Is above it.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I'm asking is the ceiling, the floor space, the floor void sufficient so that if he did store flammable liquid downstairs, it would not be a problem for the people who were asleep upstairs in that bedroom.
That isn't a planning matter. That's internal works that would require building regulations approval, and it isn't anything that I can answer that question.
Could we make it a condition?
I don't believe that would be enforceable or realistic. Do you?
Sorry, Chair, if I can assist. Because what you're asking, it really is a matter possibly to the HMO licensing for a start, and possibly health and safety, it's got to be a material planning consideration. So it wouldn't meet the test of necessity for imposing condition requiring the storage of certain or prohibiting the storage of certain liquids in that area.
But we have a fire report. Would this not come under that?
There's no fire report.
Sorry?
There's no fire report as part of the application.
Because it's not a material planning consideration, it's not a consideration you should be taking into account when you determine the application. So as such, you wouldn't be able to impose a planning condition to prohibit the actual liquids being stored in that area that's being retained by the landlord.
Okay. Councillor Slater.
Thank you, Chair. Please forgive me, everybody. From the conversation we've had just now, it seems that if the principal reason why this application is before us is because we're supposed to approve a HMO, I don't think I really know enough about the HMO regulations, do I? I mean, I take it we're required to take on trust that the Environmental Health Department are happy that it meets the HMO requirements. But what I'm getting at is there's no report from them, is there? So we can't really scrutinise how well or not well they have done that in this particular case, can we? Because we don't seem to know it, do we? We're not aware of it. And just as a side, we also talked about flooding earlier on, didn't we? And the work that's been done on properties opposite. I note, ladies and gentlemen, the Environment Agency haven't made any comment at all, have they? So we're taking on trust, aren't we, that the flood risk is nothing we should worry about and the HMO problem is nothing we should worry about. So we're being asked to approve it without full information. And that makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable, shall I say.
You've been given all the information,
yes,
that is required. The Environmental Health Housing Team have looked at the application in terms of an HMO, and they have raised no objections to the internal layout that complies with the HMO regulations. So the room sizes, the extent of amenity space, the amount of communal space, etc., all complies with the HMO regulations, and that is them saying that they have no issues with the internal layout. So yes, all the information is there, and Environmental Health Housing Team have confirmed it's acceptable. And in terms of the flooding and no comments from the EA, as I believe we explained at the site visit this morning, the Environment Agency would not comment on such a small application. It needs to be a major application for them to comment direct. There is standing advice, and the flood risk assessment takes that standing advice on board and has used the information from the Environment Agency records to complete that flood risk assessment.
Thank you. Do we have any further speakers? Councillor Huckabee.
Yeah, Michael raised the word transient in his reference to the new tenants of this property. It's been sold by the officers as being like for like. Was a home before, two bedrooms, mother and father, children growing up. The new one is going to be three bedrooms, pretty much the same in terms of human conditions. But that's not the truth of it, is it? That a relationship of occupants from the old one is a tight family unit whose visitors are going to be quite a tight bunch, determined by relationships, direct relationships of that family. The new one is going to comprise of probably 4 or 5 separate individuals who don't have a relationship, are only there to take advantage of the low cost of the house, of the room that they're renting. Those four people, could have each, if they're single, a rather larger group of individuals that they relate to, friends. So the actual inference that it's a family home and it's changing to a family home is not really valid. 4 people could have friends numbering dozens, all of which could be freely invited round and have access to come and enjoy the facilities or whatever that are there. So the comments by the objectors that there is some degree of disturbance that's going to be over and above what the house was originally designed for, it is probably valid. That's not brought out in the answer to the objections. It's sort of like dismissed by saying, well, it's a family that used to be there before because that's why the house was built. It's going to be the same sort of thing afterwards. It's not going to be the same sort of thing afterwards.
Yeah, Councillor Huckabee, if I can just interrupt in there. We're just looking at the application as a 3-bed HMO with 4 residents residing. We can't comment on how many is going to be visiting or not visiting. We've not got that information. We have to look at what's in front of us and what's been presented to you.
I think I would just point out that the reason up to 6 residents living in a property under use class C4 is permitted development, changing from a single dwelling house to that, is because it is considered that there is not a substantial change in the use of the premises. That's why it is currently permitted development. We have only introduced the Article 4 to try and control where these properties are and to ensure that they're not in causing cumulative impact because they're all located so close to each other. So that is the reason for the Article 4 and the reason why you have this application before you.
Thank you. Do we have any further speakers? Thank you. I've got no indication of any further speakers, so it's been an interesting debate. You've all had an opportunity to speak. So moving forward, for the change of use from a single dwelling house, class C3, to a 3-bed house in multiple occupation, class C4, what is before us? Do we have an indication of any committee member wishing to propose the application moving forward? Councillor Whittaker.
Yeah, whilst I'm disappointed that the actual ward councillor actually brought this forward with no reason given on his report and never spoke in favour or anything like that. But that aside, I can see no planning reason, legitimate planning reason, in the view of what actually is in the area or whatever, that we could turn this down. So I propose we accept, as per the office recommendations, and accept the application.
Thank you. Do we have a seconder for that? Councillor Jones.
So yes, I agree. I don't think there's any planning reason why we should turn this down at all.
Thank you. So I've got a proposer and I've got a seconder. We'll take the application to vote. So all those in favour of approving the application. All those against?
That's 3.
Any abstentions? Thank you. The planning application has been recommended for approval. If any members of the public would like to leave the room now, you may do so before we move on to the next part of the meeting. Thank you. We'll move on to the agenda item number 6. Can I request members to consider the appeals received, withdrawn or determined? Is that noted? Thank you. Agenda item number 7, request members to consider the delegated planning permission circulated with the agenda. Is that noted?
Noted.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll now move into the private part of the meeting. That in accordance with section 100A4 of the Local Government Act 1972, the press and public be excluded from the remainder of the meeting, as it is likely, in view of the nature of business to be transacted or the nature of the proceedings, that there will be disclosed exempt information as defined in paragraphs of Part 1 of Schedule 12A of the Act, indicated in brackets before each item number on the agenda. So can I have a proposer for that, please? Councillor Whittaker, Councillor Jones seconded. All those in favour? Thank you, that's unanimous.